United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe. Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review. My guest is designer Cesar Rivera, an artist in residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park. Cesar, welcome to the Seminary Explores.
Thank you for having me.
So your project involves Latino soldiers serving in the Union Army during the Civil War. How's it going?
It's a little rough. Most of the Latinos that served during Civil War were serving on the Confederate side.
Okay.
And I had suspected that was going to be the case when I first started looking into the history of Latinos in the Civil War. There were several that served for the Union Army along the Texas-Mexico border in the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay.
And there were two colonels that were recruiting along the Rio Grande Valley, but they never made it to Gettysburg.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They were fighting mostly in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
However, Joseph de Castro, who is the first Union Army soldier to earn a Medal of Honor, was here at Gettysburg.
Wow.
He was not the first to earn a Medal of Honor, but mm-hmm. he is the first in the Army to earn the Medal of Honor. First Latino, rather.
Okay. And so in addition to doing research, what are some of the ways that you are using design or what are you thinking of as far as what the project will become, as far as the execution of it?
I do a lot of books for myself, and they're not textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
They're more design artifacts is how mm-hmm. I describe them.
Mm-hmm.
So everything from the binding to the paper, printing process, everything that I think about are part of the concept behind the book that I design. And there are examples on my website of what I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
So the downside to viewing images on a website is that you don't get an idea of the scale of,
oh, right.
of some of the...
Right.
books I've done. So one of them, the first one that is on my website, is actually 18 by 24 inches.
Hmm.
So it's a fairly large book, but you don't get that sense of scale in the images.
And so you're living on the battlefield as you're working and researching. Is there something that you found, I don't know, to be particularly interesting or surprising or during your time here, something maybe that you didn't quite expect?
I've learned a lot coming here. I knew that Gettysburg was a significant battle during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how important it was for the Union to turn the tide of the war. And growing up in Texas and being educated in Texas, we still learned that General Lee was the greatest general of the
oh,
Civil
sure.
War.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. And I'm speaking from that young person that was in public school.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grew, I was wondering, well, why is that? They lost. So coming here, I've learned a lot about what the significance of this battle was and how many people perished here or were casualties of the conflict here. So that's been very eye-opening. I was talking to my wife a few nights ago, and I asked her that question.
Yeah.
Who's the greatest general of the Civil War? And she said, well, General Lee, and she grew up in Texas as well. And I said, I started telling her some of the stuff that I had learned here. And she's like, oh, that all makes a lot of sense. I was in the Army myself, mm-hmm. and so I have a dedication to the United States as a veteran, and so that's why I was focusing on Latinos that served in the Union Army mm-hmm. specifically.
And it's a reminder too, isn't it, of how enormous this country is. And there's so many points of reference depending on where you grow up, the sense of what the norm is or who you know, it's really interesting. Like if you're on one of the coasts or if, well, regardless of where you are, it's still the same country. And yet what you hear in public school and in your families and you know, geography really, it's more influential than we sometimes realize.
Yes, I was talking with my wife last night, and I was telling her how wonderful it's been to be in this area of the country and understanding how close everything is. So, Philadelphia and Washington D.C. and Gettysburg and Virginia, and understanding how close all of this was and in proximity. Mm. Because sure, I can look on a map and get a sense of how that is, but knowing that I can drive an hour and be someplace else, I can be in another state in an hour. Yeah. In Texas, you drive an hour, you're still in Texas. But here,
it's bigger than a lot of countries.
yeah. So here, having that sense of wow, I really understand now how everyone was moving. How fast they moved is still amazing because they didn't have any automation. They didn't have any machinery for movement. They were on foot or they were on horseback, and that speed is amazing to me. But understanding that, wow, I can get into a car and drive to where they were just a week before, and they made it in 3 or 4 days or 5 days mm-hmm. or whatever. So that's been really amazing. Hmm.
And as a veteran, what is it like to be on the battlefield and to have that extra awareness? You've already kind of started to speak to this, but I'm wondering about like even when you're going to the museum at the visitor center and this has been a sort of pilgrimage site for a long time. For the Battle of Gettysburg, and a lot of veterans come here. Have you had? How have you found that?
It's very humbling because this war was fought with lines of men walking or rushing into battle, and marching or rushing into battle, and it's not the kind of warfare that we fight today. So that understanding that that determination and that discipline to not freak out about things coming at you and just keep moving forward, even though you're the person standing right next to you who could literally be your brother, get shot and you can't stop, you keep moving forward. So that takes a lot of discipline, and I know that veterans now are the same way. Mm. Like, this is my brother. This is the person I've shed blood with. I am not a combat veteran, but I do understand that. I was a medic in the Army.
Okay.
And, but I understand that camaraderie. Mm-hmm. I understand that, that commitment to the person who's standing next to you in the thick of the fight. Mm. And so coming here and realizing that it was a much different scene where you're literally standing shoulder to shoulder with that person, and that person goes down and you can't stop. You have to keep going. Someone fills in or someone closes up that gap and you keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And going to the cemetery is very humbling, and it's just amazing how many people are buried there that are unknown. And I know that we have the tomb of the unknown in Arlington. However, there are unknowns buried at Valley Forge and mm-hmm. also here, and I'm sure other places. And that is amazing to me because someone knew who they were, but no one could identify who that person was. And it's sad in some ways. As Americans, we should remember to show our respect when we're in those places.
Mm-hmm. And you are a professor in the art department at Sam Houston State University.
Correct.
And so I have to ask you a graphic design question. And this is something that I'm just so interested in, because now that with technology, in some ways, I feel like the profession of graphic design is even more misunderstood than it used to be in the past. And I'm just very curious as to what you find, not only with the expectations of your students, but especially dealing with the public. I feel like it's really hard to talk to people about deadlines and the printing process and even something that doesn't need to be printed but still needs to go through the process of layout and proofing and all of that. So I'm totally curious, what do you think about the design profession and if you think it may or may not be as misunderstood?
I think that all designers are educators in some way, because we have to educate our clients, and we have to help them understand what the process is. So when I started as a professional, most of the work was still in print. Mm-hmm. So coming from a print background and understanding that process was really important, and it still is. Mm-hmm. However, now at Sam Houston, I teach mostly interactive courses. So I teach students how to design and code for websites and help and teach them how to design for web applications, or mobile applications. Mm. And having that overlap is helps me tremendously, because I understand what the process is. I understand how type works. Mm-hmm. I understand that old process of taking wood block type or lead type and setting it, mm-hmm. and it's backwards, and then when it prints, it's forward, and mm-hmm. you have to go through that process, and understanding how color works as well. I was surprised to find out recently that I was asking my students if they still had to go through a color theory class. So there was a whole course that I had to take as an undergraduate for color theory, and now that they don't have to.
No.
Yeah. So.
So I think that's so important.
It's covered. It's covered in some of the other courses, but it's not an in-depth 12-week course just dealing with color.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of conversations that I have with the students now, where what I was taught is still taught, but it's much more condensed, and they don't get as much exposure to it as I believe they should.
Yeah.
But they still get a lot of exposure to typography. They're not having to set type and put ink it up and paper, but they still are exposed to typography theory, that education of understanding what points and picas are. Mm-hmm. Those are measurements that we use in typography. Mm-hmm. And it takes them a little bit to get the math together. So with interactive, there's a lot of math, and I tell my students, you will be using math in this course, and I get those looks like, oh no. And we're not dealing with simple addition and subtraction. We're dealing with percentages of the sizes of things, and being able to use fractions of those and making conversions in between inches and picas and percentages. And they're like, what? So it takes a little bit. But educating the client is important, because even though we talk about, as designers, we talk amongst ourselves and we have that designer speak, we have to remember that our clients don't understand all the time what we're talking about. So we have to find a way to help them understand, okay, here's what we do and here's how we do it, and then this is what you're going to get at the end. Without all the technical jargon that goes along with it.
Well, and I love how you put that you say all designers are educators. I think in some ways for designers it's helpful. The earlier that can be internalized, the more helpful it is that it's just part of it. Like, for example, it never ceases to amaze me that some people don't really know what a logo is supposed to do or what the purpose of it is. And so they... the expectations that are poured into it, and because there's so much that can be done now, which is it's great that people have access to be able to experiment and do things on their own, but sometimes you can have situations where it's almost like when people talk about dresses at the Oscars, right? It's like everyone has an opinion, and yet you're not the one who had to actually design the dress or make the dress. Like, there's so much more that goes into it. And so I think that's even more important now, the sort of education and you know, explaining, because there can be the illusion of, oh, well, you don't really need training for that. Like, anyone can do it.
There's a joke that I have with my mentor. And he's a great designer. That he works in San Antonio, but he told me this story one time that he was working with a client, and this guy is really good. I mean, he is globally recognized as a designer, and he had this client that he was working with, and he gave a quote for how much a logo was going to cost this business, and the guy eventually came back, the business owner came back to him and said, appreciate your time, but my nephew has a computer and he's going to do the logo for it. And so that's kind of a running joke between he and I that, that, you know, just because you have the equipment doesn't mean you know how to synthesize a images into a mark that is easily recognizable, where people say, I know what that is and I know what they do, and I want that product, or I want to work with that service. And that's the crux of the issue. And then crowdsourcing is compounding that problem. However, I do see crowdsourcing as a potential tool for designers to use, where maybe someone isn't as talented in illustration, where they crowdsource illustration. But I also am an advocate for paying people for their time, for their work. So if you reach out to people to do samples of work, then if they're working specifically for you, then you should pay them. But if you are just asking for samples of their work and say, hey, I want to see your portfolio, well, that you're asking for a reference, basically.
Right, and that's already existing work. And
that's a big difference. And you're not working for that person.
Right. You're not starting to solve the problem already.
Right. But I think that a crowdsourcing site could be advantageous to many people who desire to be designers or who are looking to find different ways to find the people who can help them do those things. And one of the great things about design is that through the Bauhaus was all about getting design to the people. And so there's that idea as well. So modernism of that time was to get design to the people. And there are things that are available now that are getting design to the people. However, finding someone trained to help them through that process, that's where they need more help. That's where the masses need more help.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to say about your the project that you're working on and where you'd like it to go forward. Are you doing a book on the Latino soldiers, or?
I will be doing a book. I will probably focus more on Joseph de Castro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There is this great book that has a lot. It has a whole list of Latinos that served with the Union Army and with the Confederates. So I'm going to be looking through that book and seeing if I can find some more information on Latinos that served here at Gettysburg. But it sounds like I'm going to be, or so far it looks like I'm going to be focusing more on Joseph de Castro and what he did here, capturing the Confederate colors and delivering it to his commander. I'm not quite sure what form it's going to take yet. It's going to be a book, but I'm not quite sure what form it's going to take yet. I really enjoy making books, hand-binding books. All the books I've made so far are hand-bound. I've never sent anything off to get mass-produced or produced by somebody else. I really enjoy that process and getting my hands dirty.
Mm-hmm.
But if people are interested, it will have happened by the time this gets aired, but on Friday I have examples of my work at First Friday.
Very good. So that's downtown Gettysburg at the Wills House Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. You've been listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review. My guest has been Gettysburg National Military Park Artist in Residence, Cesar Rivera. You can find him on his website, ecesarrivera.com. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary, with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.